Billy Zane. He's not British at all. He's
from Pittsburgh.
He has that my diamonds kind of talk.
Yeah. all British people have that.
And so do rich Americans from Pittsburgh.
Yes. He says, my steel. I'll just
put
buy
the diamond in the coat. Put the coat on her and that.
Everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
I'm the king of the world! Bah, bah, bah.
Why don't you do the... It's, what?
That's a Blue's Clues.
I don't know, I thought he goes, hoo-ooh. Like sympathy for the devil, you know? Hoo-woo!
My mistake.
Yeah. Joining me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory. Some even call him the heart of the ocean. That is indeed Gus over there, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory. And
you're saying I'm the heart of the ocean, and I
hate the ocean.
Rose wears me, and just me. Okay.
Indeed. Well, you know, here we are, everyone. This is the big one. The big one. We're setting sail. You know, this month, February, was our month of love. Valentine's Day, and that, a-thon. I think it's changed every week. But we started with the discussion, found our way over to Princess Bride, this whimsical tale, then found our way over to 500 Days of Summer, a story that's about boy meets girl, but you should know up front, it is not a love story. And then here a whimsical tale. And then here we work our way back and setting sail on the Titanic, a story of iceberg meets ship.
A whimsical tale,
indeed. Yes, so this was the big one, the closing out the month of love here on the podcast with a tale that many, especially like, I would argue teens from the 90s, but, you know, really many people, I would assume, consider this to be a pretty, I don't know if influential is the right word or... powerful love story or whatever you want to call it. It kind of set the tone.
It was the romance movie, the love story of a generation.
Yeah, sure. It's like, you know, you have the people that are like, oh, Romeo and Juliet. So, you know, there's Romeo and Juliet and then there's Jack and Rose.
Jim Cameron.
Because he's friend buddies. Of the show, yeah.
Yeah. He's like, Romeo and Juliet, I'm going to put them on a boat.
It's like, I'm going to put them on a boat and make it a better tale, because Romeo and Juliet sucks.
Yeah.
This is a movie, you know, that is very impactful on a variety of ways and on a variety of levels. So before we get into it, let me tell you what we do here on the pod, because if you're new to the show, every week we watch a film, we then take to the pod to discuss said film, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. We then submit that movie to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it, who would compose, who would star? Same film, same story, just modern booking, the modern era. Every now and again we switch it up, we do different things. Way back when, I think the first time we ever did it, we watched The Little Rascals, and we instead of casting modern stars, we casted wrestlers, WWE wrestlers in that role. Last week, we did 500 Days of Summer. We cast as if it was 40s, 50s, and 60s actors and actresses. So this week, we did retrocast last week. This week, maybe going to mix it up a little bit, but hey, you're going to have to stick around to find out. So, with that being said, we find our way aboard Titanic. And this is a movie that I have not seen, and I would say, I'm 25 now, I would argue that I have not seen this movie in close to 15 years. I'll put it this way, the last time I watched this was on VHS, and we did have to flip tapes.
Yeah.
We had to put another tape in to finish the movie because it was so long. It had two VHS tapes.
So really what you're saying is the last time you watched this movie, you really only watched parts of tape one.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I remember a lot of parts about this movie, and there's a lot of little nuances and things I don't at all remember. I'm glad I watched it now because I mean, before we watched the movie, we were talking to my friend Pork, and he was very critical of it. He's like, I just don't understand why people like it and this, that, and the other, and it's not that good of a story, and it's not really
I believe his quote, his exact wording was, I don't know why people like that stupid fucking movie.
Yes, but to him, too, he also hadn't seen the movie in a very, 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 very long time. And I was in the same boat to a degree. Like, I knew it was important. I knew it was considered to be good. But I couldn't help but feel that it was overrated. And that's a flaw of mine It is a flaw of mine. I think a lot of people have this similar flaw where it's a lot of people like something. And you've been burned. Like I have this tendency for a lot of people to be like, oh, you got to watch this. It's so good. You got to watch this. So good. It's so good. And then I watch it. I'm like, yeah, it's not that great. It's okay. And
overhyped perhaps.
Overhyped. So I lead myself into like shows that I've never watched before or movies I've never watched before, almost as a defense mechanism of like why I'm not watching it. I'll just be like, I don't think it's that good, or it's kind of overblown or whatever, even though I really haven't given it too much of the light of day. And I feel like a lot of people fall into that same category. This was a movie that I was kind of doing that with, where it's like, I know the story. I don't need to watch it. I know it's good, but it's not that great. But upon rewatching it, I'll tell you, it's pretty damn good. You know, it's not top 10, but it's way better than I had basically put it in my head. It is a phenomenal movie, and I couldn't help but feel, I know, back to that discussion with Pork, he said, I don't understand why it was the highest grossing movie of all time for so long. And I do, because it's a spectacle. And we'll talk about that, but I could see, even if this movie came out today, like, never, say this movie didn't exist until this year, or last year, or whatever, I feel like it would have still led people to be like, did you see the Titanic? Oh, you got to see it. And not even like for the love story, but oh man, the ship stuff. Oh, wow. Like it would cause people to talk. It would cause people to go see it. Much like Avatar, where it was like, did you see Avatar? Oh man, the cinematics, everything's so beautiful and great. And the 3D is amazing. A lot of people feel that story is lackluster in hindsight. But at the same time, it was the event. It was an event movie. You had to go see it because it was something mm-hmm. special. And that was what this movie was at the time.
Yes. And every now and then, a special movie like that comes out. Recently, we had Avengers Endgame. It was similar. Obviously, because half the world went and saw it.
Yeah, that was special for different reasons, but yes.
Right. Titanic, especially for its time, around the time it came out, yes, depicted a story of a true event, one of the most tragic events in our time. And so it was the chronicling of that, which was, I won't say unique, because there was a Titanic movie made in the 50s. But for, I guess, this generation, it was directed by James Cameron, who had... Yeah. So much success in the past from Terminator and Alien and Terminator 2 and so on and so forth, making this epic about Titanic. But it was the love story. It was Kate Winslet, Leonardo DiCaprio, that really was like the glue that made people stick to this movie. Not just their characters, but the love story, you know, love sells, damn it. But this movie really just had it all. That's what really brought people to it. It's a great love story. It'll make you laugh. It'll certainly make you cry. And maybe. it has a lot of suspense and action. Yeah. And I'll get into some of that stuff later, but yeah, this movie for the time was very unique. It pushed the boundaries of filmmaking and like invented new techniques and just really it was James Cameron at the helm, and he has the reputation of being kind of a tyrant, maybe hard to work with, but that's not the case. Most people in hindsight take that back. It's more like he knows what he wants and he's going to get it. He's going to get it. He's
Jim Cameron.
Yeah.
Jimmy Cameron. Tough.
He does stuff like he'll have a cinematographer, right, running the camera, and James Cameron's like, I want the shot to look like this. And he'll just take it and do it himself. This movie, Titanic, is the first time there's ever been a director, writer, producer, and editor be the same person. And I think be nominated for Oscars for all of those things, too.
Sounds like a damn monster movie.
Yeah.
Rocky.
Not quite. this movie won 11 Oscars, which is
most of all
huge.
No, not most.
No,
of all.
No. There's been... Lord of the Rings, Gone with the Wind, not Gone with the Wind. Oh, shit on me. I know this any other day.
Is that the parody of Lean on Me? Shit on me! crap. Anyways.
Cover for me while I look this shit up.
Yeah, no, I mean...
Okay, we got Titanic, Ben-Hur, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King have won 11 Oscars each.
Note that all of those movies are like 3 hours, 40 minutes long.
You want to make it in this business? Make a long-ass movie.
Yeah.
That's Snyder cut out yet.
Just make it good. If it's not good, people might be like, it's too long.
People are like that anyway with this movie, even though... I'll tell you what.
I don't know.
It is long.
It is.
I think we watched it in like chunks. It's almost like flipping the VHS tape anyway.
Yeah. Watch it like a movie. You watch this movie like a movie, and damn it, it's a movie. Now you watch it like a TV show. It makes it a little more doable.
A little episodic.
Yeah.
I did it in two parts. I watched the first 2 hours, and I got to the part where Rose goes to E-Deck and it's kind of flooding. She's looking for Jack, and it's very quiet, very ominous. It's like really revving up. I was like, if I watch 5 more minutes of this, I'm going to watch the whole thing tonight. And it was already like late in the evening.
Yeah.
And I need to go Betty Boo. But finished it the next night. And it is long, but it's such an engaging movie. Yeah. I really don't think there's any slow parts unless romance isn't your thing. This movie has something for everyone. I really do think that, if you're not into romance or period piece kind of films, then the first half of this movie might not be for you. But as soon as they hit that iceberg, and that kind of drama kicks in.
Yeah. Comes more suspense movie.
Yeah. Suspense, like action movie. It's out of this world. Honestly, and just to imagine, maybe it's not like 1,000% accurate, but it's very close. Just witnessing these people, if you see it as that, like these are real people kind of thing. They endured this night. It's very, it's almost hard to watch.
It's surreal.
Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I ever saw this movie.
You're like, boobs.
Well, my eyes were covered. I believe I was 8 years old, or I was probably 7 years
old. Yeah, it surprises me that this movie's rated PG-13.
Yeah, well, I was
for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, a lot of reasons. I remember the first time I saw this movie, and it's the end, near the end, and you know the boat is tilted, people are falling, jumping to their death. Even I remember. It's near when the boat's about to finally sink. Someone jumps off and they hit the propeller and they start like spinning.
Yeah, that made me go, ooh.
I remember laughing because I thought it was funny.
You're a monster. He hit it.
Yeah. And Dad was like, he like very serious, was like, that is not funny. Like, don't laugh at that. And then I remember from then on, I was just like...
And then you remember from that on, things got hazy. You started killing animals.
And watching it last night and just seeing these events again, and it was about that part, is when it's tilted and you just see like the swarm of people running up to the, is it the stern of the ship? And I was like overwhelmed with emotion then. And it kind of, it reminded me of when I was, the first time I saw this movie, and I thought that was funny.
It's all perspective.
I was 7 years old then, and I'm 30 years old now. You know, we almost should have watched this movie, like, what is it, next year? Is it next year? This movie's 25 years old next year.
97 it came out.
Yeah. So she's 24.
Not good at math.
Hey, we watched it on Billy Zane's birthday.
Yes, we did. Let's talk about Billy Zane. Let's talk about these characters. The movie has a lot of interesting arcs throughout, because it does have, you know, this is like our new thing ever since watching Miracle on 31st Street, is like saying all the different genres that are encapsulated in the film. But this does have a lot of like thrilling moments. It's a thriller. It's got suspense in it. It's got a lot of love in it. You even mentioned a little bit of action, but it's also got a lot of like character study in it, like rich and rich versus poor, you know, and
I don't think that's a genre, but
it's not. But I'm saying like outside of that, it has like these other, not subtopics, but other, like it has these kind of sub stories that aren't as important, like overall to the actual viewing experience. But when you really dive in. Yeah, when you dive in deep, you can see these, you know, things, these rifts of, you know, between the high society and, you know, lower class. And I've seen millions of different documentaries and read things and stuff where they say, like, you know, the common thing is, like, money can't buy you love, right? Money can't buy you happiness, all that stuff. And there was a documentary a couple years back that I watched for a class. I believe it was called Happy. And it was the study of that, like going to these lower class, you know, families in different countries and in America, and like seeing what made them happy, and basically proving that point that money does make you happy. And there is a lot of things like that in this movie where like they're at this high class dinner and it's very stuffy and arrogant, and then they go down and everyone's partying and having a good time in this like lower class section of the boat.
Having a third class Irish party.
Yes. There's a lot of like interesting little sub bits like that, because you do have this meeting of worlds in this movie between, you know, you have Rose, an Irish Rose. You have Rose, who is this, what do you say? Her father left her and her mother. And she's basically being married into this rich steel family.
From Pittsburgh,
who is played by Billy Zane, Cal. And he's very arrogant and maniacal and evil. And then you have like this classic old money woman playing Rose's mother, who's, you know, that if you think of like that era of like high class, that's like what you think of, kind of deal. But then you have the new money situations with like what's her name, Kathy Bates, who's phenomenal in this movie as well.
Yeah,
and they even say
Molly Brown.
Yeah, they even say that she's quote unquote new money. Like she was middle class or something. So she doesn't act like everyone else. And they kind of detest her for it. There's a lot of interesting little sub character studies and arcs and things in there that I kind of like about this movie.
A lot of social status stuff, and to make it layman's turn for our spit listeners, you got your My Diamond people, like, oh, My Diamonds, and you got your Yenzers down here.
Yes.
Okay.
that's the middle class.
If Sean Connery was in this movie, who would he play?
The captain. At that point in time in his career, easily.
Yeah.
Like, you know what would save us now? Red October.
You play the iceberg.
Hello.
That's Jimmy Stewart.
He'd be up in the stars.
When Rose is laying on that door at the end of the movie, looking up at the sky, Jimmy Stewart is in the constellation.
The boat's sinking, and Draco swoops in and says, "Quickly, boys and girls, hop on my back."
Yeah, that'd be a different movie from, obviously. It'd be a different movie because more people get saved. Yeah.
No, just them. Because they have Dragonheart.
It is a story of different social classes, and you have that classic, as we mentioned, that Romeo and Juliet, that forbidden love.
Yes.
Set in 1912 with Leo, who ironically played Romeo.
Yes, he did.
And Kate Winslet, who was in Kid and King Arthur's Court. Yes, she was. And yeah, their careers were made after this. I mean, Leo, they both had some successes prior, obviously, but this made them like superstars.
Yeah, Leo was an up and comer already.
Well,
destined.
Yeah, I mean, he had already been nominated for an Oscar at this point, but he became like a teenage heartthrob. You know, his career went a different path for a while. Quick factoid, did you know his next film lined up after Titanic was going to be American Psycho, and he was going to play Patrick Bateman?
Have heard that before.
Yeah, his agent said absolutely not, because you have this new persona as this teenage heartthrob. You can't play a role like Patrick Bateman.
Well, I know, too, that movie was like blacklisted, too, for a while.
There you go. Anywho. Yeah, so I can't remember what role I was on, but yeah, it shot those two into stardom. And watching this movie now as opposed to when I was younger, two different beasts, obviously. But I remember being in probably like first grade, second grade, third grade, and so on. Everyone, all the girls loved Titanic, and they loved Leo. Therefore, I hated Leonardo DiCaprio, and I hated Titanic because I'm a boy, and that's not my kind of movie, that kind of thing. And how foolish I was as a young lad, because this movie's probably in my top 20. At one point, I would have said it was in my top 10, but as I've grown up and found the movies that kind of mold me, this has slipped out of that. But phenomenal movie all over, and it for me, it hinges on Leo and Kate, because it's funny how I detested them when I was younger, but now I'm like, that's like my favorite on-screen couple.
You know, it's my interesting.
Favorite movie kiss.
You know, what's interesting about this month in particular is there's been a common theme across all three movies we watched, with you specifically, and there might be one for me as well. I'm not sure. I'm just outside looking in. But all three of the movies we watched this month, Princess Bride, 500 Days of Summer, and Titanic, they are a clear like view of how your thoughts on movies have changed, but also like just your like feelings about like love stories and things like that. Like you said, like Princess Bride, you didn't want to watch it because it was for girls. It was a girl movie. And then our cousin made you watch it, and you're like, oh, it's pretty good. Then like 500 Days of Summer, you're like, I hated Summer. She was a bitch. But as you got older, you're like, oh, she's pretty good. And then it's a
normal human being.
Yeah, it's a good tale. And then you get to this one, you're like, I hated it because it's for girls. And then you're like, I kind of love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in my I hadn't seen it in a long time. I was in my 20s when I...
A very long time?
Yeah. It had been 84 years. And, yeah, I was probably in my early 20s the next time I watched it. Honestly, it was when they re-released it. They re-released it in 3D in 2012. And I watched it, and, oh, my, I was blown away. Blown away by the story, by the visuals, by the grandeur that this movie presents. And one of the big catalysts I mentioned, yes, the characters, Rose and Jack. but the music. Yeah. The music by James Horner, rest his soul, is gorgeous and
simplistic almost, at the same time.
Huh?
Simplistic at the same time.
Maybe. It's weird because there's like a lot of like woodwinds or like bagpipes and flutes and stuff, but then there's like synth.
Yeah.
Like ha. Like those aren't real people. Those are like when you put choir on a piano and hit that.
Yeah.
There
was a moment when I was watching this where I was like, the music almost didn't match what I was watching. And that was a good thing. No, that was a good thing. It's when the ship is flooding and it's showing all the different shots of the ship flooding, but it's playing very like whimsical music almost. Mm. And it's like it's not suspenseful. It's not like what's the proper word here? It's not like it doesn't feel dark. It doesn't feel evil or anything like that. Like, yeah, this terrible tragedy's happening. It's almost like watching everything just get washed away, and it's almost melancholy in a way. It's interesting. Yeah. Does that make more sense now?
I believe that's the part where is it a quartet? They're playing their instruments, and it's like, gentlemen, what's the quote? Do you know it? Gentlemen, this is...
It's been a privilege playing with you tonight. That's all he says.
And that the final song they play, that's what you're thinking of. That's the music that plays.
But it's calm, it's peaceful. And that was their reason for playing, the reason they played, but they were trying to maintain peace and make people calm and everything. But
right. There's some tracks, though, like a track called Take Her to See, Mr. Murdoch. That's the one that's like, ha, 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 da, 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 da. You know what I'm talking about?
Take Her to the Stars, Bowen.
and the dolphins are jumping and everything.
That's who Sean Connery would have been.
That gets my blood thumping. I remember driving... so it may be a mix CD and it had that on it. I remember rolling all the windows down, blasting that particular track that was on the mix CD and just flying probably like 90 miles an hour, like
putting a brick on the gas, getting out of the car, putting your hands up in the air.
True story.
I don't want a true story after saying that.
True story. I was in, probably senior year, and we took an art history trip to New York.
I can see a Statue of Liberty already. Very small, of course.
Yeah. We took this, like, it was like a tour of New York or tour of Manhattan. It was like a little boat ride. There were other, oh no, I apologize. This is a choir trip, not an art history trip. Cause there were other choirs. I did that
trip as well.
There were other choirs there, and it was like a dance party, and I had a case of the boo-hoos, and I didn't want to be around anybody, and I certainly didn't want to be at some dance party. So everyone literally was inside the ship, and I went out to the front of the boat. And as I got out to the front of the boat, we are approaching the Brooklyn Bridge, and I did it. I climbed up on the stern, or right up on the railing, like AKA Jack and Rose, and held my arms out like I was flying, and I flew right under the Brooklyn Bridge.
Sure that wasn't your senior trip? I feel like I did, we senior did something trip? Similar, and it was eighth not, grade? No, senior, like high school, because
my senior trip was to Washington, D.C.
Ours was too. I feel like I did something very similar. I never did that, but I feel like I was on a boat, like, and there was a dance on the boat and stuff, it wasn't New York. I don't know. Anyways, proceed. Mm-hmm. Did you play that music in your head?
I did. I played some Titanic music in my head, because there's so many good tracks. You know, you got your classic, like, woo-hoo. That sound just like it.
you got too high, and it cut your mic out, so you went, and it stopped. So it did, in a way.
You could picture it in your head.
Yeah.
And I've been jamming hard to that that third party or third class party Irish jam. Yeah, that's been fun to jam to. Yeah, the music is another bit of the glue.
Music slaps.
It does slap. One of my favorite scenes of the movie is, yes, seeing Rose be pulled into this world, and she's like genuinely happy for the first time, maybe in her life. And just seeing her character just kind of blossom, and you know, she's drinking beer and smoking cigarettes and out toughing tough men by standing on her toes and dancing and laughing, and realizing like this could be the life for her, like true happiness like that. And yes, with Jack, who's like that's his element. So I love that about them. It's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. I love their first meeting when Rose is, you know, lost all hope and goes to jump, but yeah,
stops
Jack off.
Don't
Jack
do it.
Her hand. Don't do it. You won't do it. Doesn't want to jump in that water. I think of that all the time too. When that line where he's like, it's like a thousand knives. Yeah, this movie like is kind of embedded in my upbringing just because I saw it when I was so young. So a lot of these lines just stick with me, kind of deal. But yeah, and then getting down to just Jack and Rose in general. I mean, we can't get around it, but yes, it was probably a lot of people's sexual awakening seeing the infamous drawing scene. And I know Kate Winslet was very nervous about doing that scene. It's her first nude scene, and actress Emma Thompson kind of got her through it. They had done a movie previously, so she kind of confided in Emma Thompson, and yeah, just kind of relaxed her mind. And Kate Winslet, first meeting of Leo, to break the ice, she flashed him.
Nice.
Yeah, to kind of ease that tension.
Like, oh, you're trembling. He's like, well,
I'll be all right. Don't worry. But yeah, and that's that. That gets down to it too. As a young lad, I wasn't able to really see that. I had a pillow cover my face. First boobies I ever saw. And there you go. As a teenager, there's like that sexualization of it. I'm like, oh, you know, boobs. As were most people. But now as an adult, and this is probably why this movie is PG-13, although it shows nudity. If taken in the correct context, it's not sexualized. It's the human form.
It's art.
It's beautiful. Kate Winslet is beautiful. Her body is beautiful. I know she had like a lot of criticisms of her weight at the time, which just baffles me. Like even like famous people like Joan Rivers and like commenting on how her weight needed to be changed for her role and all kinds of bullshit. Foolish. But yeah, that's why it's still PG-13 and still has nudity. But it's because it's seen as art, beauty of the human body.
It's the same as looking at like a statue, like an ancient Greek statue or a Roman mm-hmm. statue, where it's fully nude. No one thinks to cover up anyone's eyes from that. You know, that's in like books. Shit, like,
and I would put that up there too. You got like ancient Greek statues,
Kate Winslet,
and you got Kate Winslet and actually those are Jim Cameron's hands drawing Rose. He's actually a very good artist.
Yeah, I think I knew that.
Yeah, he's left-handed, so he drew the picture flipped, and then they mirrored it because Jack's right-handed.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, those are James Cameron's hands. If you see any hands drawn. But yeah, this movie is just full of beauty, whether it's the cinematography, whether it's the music, the style, the directing's beautiful. Jack, Leo DiCaprio is beautiful. Kate Winslet, Billy Zane, beautiful.
They're beautiful.
Beautiful man.
His Billy Zane's eyebrows.
Billy Zane's eyebrows.
Let's make the perfect human being take Billy Zane's eyebrows, Val Kilmer's Batman lips.
Kate Winslet's body. Sounds like a damn monster.
And Gaston's voice.
Oh, goodness.
And now Belle will marry me.
Oh, goodness.
I'll
tell you what. If it was raining, someone knocked on my door, opened the doors, Kate Winslet, soaking wet, she had poop on her lips, I'd still kiss her.
Nay.
I'll tell you what.
What about Billy Zane's eyebrow? Just one of them, though.
If it was raining, and I opened the door because someone knocked, and it was Billy Zane with his perfect eyebrows, he had poop on his lips, I'd kiss him. But if I opened the door and he was bald, I might not. He needs that cow hair.
What if you opened the door and he was there and he just kind of stood there and slapped you?
I'd like get slapped but hold my head to the right for way too long.
Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit, because obviously Rose is engaged to Billy Zane's character, Cal, and he's very controlling, and they do a really good job at, like, making him a pretentious asshole right off the bat, and he does it phenomenal. I mean, he's a good great actor. But you're right at, like, the very first time, the very first time, you don't really get that, like, she does not like him too much. But it's like the first dinner sequence, or maybe it's the lunch sequence, but they like come up and they're like, "What will you be having soon?" He's like, "We'll both be having the lamb." And then they like continue on. And he's like, "You like lamb, sweet pea." And I think Kathy Bates says something along the lines, "You going to chew the food for her too?"
It cut the meat for it too.
Yeah. Yeah, there's stuff like that all the time. And you can just tell they do a good job at making him seem like an asshole, the asshole that he is, because a lot of time when you have money, things get covered up, and you don't see that side of people, because it's all polished.
Yeah, he is a polished turd, is he not? His character, because he is slimy, disgusting, controlling, abusive, both mentally and physically, and he's... He is a great movie villain. He's a great foil to what we want. We want to see Rose and Jack get together because they're happy. And he just puts his little fingers in there all the time and ruins it because he always wins.
Yeah, he doesn't even really like... He doesn't even love Rose. It's more of... It's that classic thing that you hear about is like he views her as property almost.
Yeah.
And it's his.
Like, that's mine.
Yeah, it's his. So you're not getting your hands on that. But I don't know.
Or he even tries to kill her later.
Yeah. Well, kind of snaps, you know.
He's a horrible shot.
He is a horrible shot. But he's great.
He might have my favorite line in this whole movie.
The coat like, part?
I put the diamond in the coat. I put the coat on her!
Better than when he just says, "Sweet pea." Come here, sweet pea. He's great. Kate Winslet's portrayal of Rose is awesome. Just like watching, like you said, her go from this like stuck up person who had been like longs to escape that world and is finally given that opportunity. And you see like her basically have this shift and not knowing. Like, it's the scene when Leo is saying, you know, "I teach you to ride a horse like a man." And she's like,
Spit like a man.
But like you can see she's having fun for what seems to be like the first time, which is interesting. And that honestly, that from that point, that final picture of her like riding the horse at the very, very end of the movie, that was good. Because you feel that. You're like, oh, she did what she promised through those pictures that you see at the end.
Yeah. I like never really picked up on that until just last night. And that got me good.
Yeah, and then the trailer roll or the credits roll, and you're like,
"Oh, yeah." I was.
You turn around and you look like you just sank in the Titanic too. Just wet, for multiple reasons.
I watched the movie with roommate Matt, and it got to basically the end. Titanic has sunk. Jack and Rose are floating on that door, or at least one is. And Matt, they're making their promises, or Jack was making her promise. Matt got up and left, and I was like, thank God, now I can cry in peace, because I didn't think I was going to.
Why do you leave at that part?
Well, you know him.
True. It's like, movie's over.
He's like, I have something to do all of a sudden. And he leaves. I was like, oh, you're leaving with 15 minutes left.
Seen it.
But good. Because I needed to bawl hard, because Jack, he doesn't wake up. But that got me a little misty-eyed. I've seen it, you know, a million times, so that doesn't hurt as bad. But damn it, yeah, those pictures and old Rose, you get the you know, she dies,
yeah,
and then it takes you back to Titanic, and I'm gonna cry just talking about it. Everyone's there waiting for it. And at the top of the stairs is Jack, and they're finally back together again, and they kiss, and the movie ends, and yes, it goes to credits, and Celine Dion ruptures in, and I am fucking soaked with tears. I was like audibly crying.
That's the thing too, is I want to touch base on old Rose and young Rose. I like the way that this movie is set up, where it starts in the modern, well, 1990s, but it starts in the modern time of where this takes place. I mean, it really doesn't matter. To be 100% honest, it's really not much other than that first little bits of technology that couldn't say this movie is, like, current, like today, like the 2021. I like that it's showing the real time. I also like that there's never really narration while the old parts are playing. Like, it's not like Forrest Gump where, like, he'll be doing something and showing the event, but then he's, like, narrating over it. It's never really like that to a degree. Like, there's, like, small little intercepts. But most of the time when she's talking, like, telling the story, it goes back to her. And it lets you kind of disconnect and realize that, like, all these things happening are leading to this moment. Of her telling the story, which is interesting.
Gloria Stewart, who played old Rose, was great. She's 86 at the time.
She's 101. And they put makeup.
Well, she's 86, the actress, and they put makeup on her to make her look 100 years old. And first time in movie history, it might still stand. I don't know for sure, but it was the first time in movie history that two different actresses were nominated for the same role.
Same character. Yeah.
That's same character. And Gloria Stewart still is the oldest woman to ever get nominated for an acting Oscar.
She walked out and said, "Today is my 111th birthday."
Yeah. She did pass away in 2020 at the age of 100. Years old.
That's insane.
Or is it 2010? Sorry, 2010.
That's okay. That makes more sense, because I was like, she was 86 in 2020. she's too old.
Yeah. She was 100 years old, which is Christ. Kind of insane. Ironic. Speaking of ironic, or things of fate, I want to talk about the actual ship itself.
Yeah.
The Titanic. The most famous ship in history, I would say. And
other than maybe the Orca. Oh, Coast Guard, this is Orca. They both sunk.
You know. yeah,
only so, one blew up a shark, though.
Yeah, can you imagine if in Titanic the boat sank, there's like thousands of people floating in the water, dude, and there's fucking sharks,
dude,
too.
Like, that's my fear. Like, when I watch this, legitimately, while people are swimming in the ocean and stuff, even when Rose gets off the door to go for the whistle, it's a legitimate fear. Like, I don't like that. It makes me uncomfortable.
Anxiety.
Yeah, which I, even though I'm like, it's too cold for sharks, but
it would be too cold for sharks.
I don't know. But yeah, I'm just saying, you know, the iceberg made the Titanic its bitch. they made Jaws their bitch.
Yeah, they went back the next day and they blew up that iceberg.
Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of fate and things like that, this ship was destined to sink.
Yes.
It was its fate. There were so many things pointing towards the demise of this unsinkable dream, as they would put it. Things of just even from the get-go, the ship itself, there was a coal fire inside prior to setting sail that damaged the inside of the hull. Ironically, or maybe by fate, is where the iceberg hit, the weakened metal. So if they hadn't tried to turn, which the boat couldn't corner worth a damn, because it had a small rudder, if they had just hit that iceberg head on, the ship would have survived.
Yes.
It wouldn't have sank, and everyone would have been fine. It would have taken them a little longer, I think, to get to New York at that point.
Yeah.
Things like they couldn't spot the iceberg. There was only one iceberg in the area. Yes, there was reports of icebergs prior to this event. I think there was like six other ships who had reported seeing icebergs that sent telegrams to the Titanic, but
they phoned them up on their cell phones.
Yeah. It was fate they hit this one rogue iceberg. They couldn't see it. Part of the reason was the binoculars that were used by the men in the crow's nest to spot icebergs were held by another, captain or shipman who had taken them to his quarters and he had fallen asleep. I'm trying to think of other little factoids like that. I mean, even things like that are seen in the movie about the lifeboats. There were supposed to be like 100 lifeboats, but they took out all of them other than I think at like 16 or 20 lifeboats. Because they looked ugly and they were blocking the view and they had assumed the ship was unsinkable anyway. So why need lifeboats? It's just horrible things like that. And then kind of spooky, whether you believe this or not, but a lot of people, passengers and crew included, had like premonitions of this event where even on the night of, like, people shot awake because they had dreams of people drowning. And later that night, people did, in fact, do just that. Or the stuff like that could have been, like, after the fact. Like, after that night, they're like, I had a dream about this. Like, did you?
True.
But documented, there was a crewman who would send letters to his wife saying how he just didn't trust the ship, how he hated it and things like that. He just didn't, it had a bad feeling about it. That was before they even set sail. So, interesting. And I believe this ship was part of a series of three other ships. I don't remember the names now, the Olympian or something, and something else. And they had also had misfortunes. I think it was the Olympian got hit by the British Royal Navy boat and was sinking, didn't sink, but it had to be repaired. That's what delayed. Oh yeah, that too. That's what delayed the setting sail of the Titanic by, I think, like 2 or 3 weeks. Therefore, you know, just altered events.
Yeah.
Kind of eerie stuff. How like that boat, no matter what, like it just had to go down.
Yeah. It's insane. And even things that hit hard about that movie is like when she says how 1,500 people went into the water and only one boat came back for them. And only six were pulled from the water. Yep.
True
like,
story.
Stuff like that is pretty surreal. I mean, you're watching this moment and it is very gut-wrenching to watch and view because you can believe the horror and you can believe the fear. And like I said, like I have a thing about deep water and sharks and shit and like that literally ran through my mind many a times throughout this movie. I'm like, I don't like that. Like I would be losing my mind if I was in the middle of the ocean.
It gives me the willies yes, sharks and things like that, but honestly, for the longest time, I don't like the water. It gives me the willies because I know somewhere out there, the Titanic is sunk at the bottom of the ocean. And just the visual of that just gives me the willies.
There's more than just the Titanic. There's a lot of different boats. Do you know, like, it's interesting, like, that was a big deal. Like, they didn't know it kind of exactly where the Titanic went down. Like, they had to base it off for a lot of reports, and then they finally were able to, like, get down to it. Do you know that it's actually slowly disappearing?
Yeah.
It's, like, eroding away.
It's been eroding for over 100 years now.
Yeah, because it's iron. It's very interesting. I wish there was a way to get it back, but does not seem like that'll happen.
As soon as they touch it to move it, it's going to fall apart if they try to do that. Just the pressure of the water
and everything. There is a cool museum. I forget exactly where it is, but they have, I think, the largest amount of artifacts of the Titanic.
Is it Northern Ireland or something?
No, it's in America. It's in America.
Okay.
I don't know exactly where it is. The only reason I know of it is Ghost Adventures did an episode in it. But it has a lot of it has like a replica of the boat that you can walk around and stuff, and it's very interesting to see. And I was curious about you sent that article about the Titanic 2.
Yeah.
Is that legit?
Yeah, I believe so. I don't know if, you know, things going on in the world has prolonged that, but yeah, and it was supposed to set sail Titanic 2 in 2022, a replica of the Titanic to set sail and complete the course of the original Titanic.
All right, this museum, the Titanic Museum Attraction is what it's called, is located in Branson, Missouri, for some reason.
Sweet.
The museum holds 400 pre-discovery artifacts in 20 different galleries and has it is pretty cool. Like it is like literally the entire building is like the Titanic.
Should have been in Chippewa Falls.
Chippewa Falls should have been. But then they could have gone ice fishing.
Yeah.
I'll send you the picture of the museum on it here. You'll get the message in a second. It says literally the picture is too powerful. So it says, oh well.
You know what's interesting is the cost to make the movie Titanic, which at the time was the most expensive movie ever made, over $200 million. And with inflation, is the third most expensive movie ever made. It's funny that the movie cost that much, cost more to make the movie than it did to make the Titanic itself. Believe it or not, with inflation, I believe the cost to make the Titanic was like $120 million in like 1912 or 1911, I guess is when they probably started building it. And James Cameron himself, through deep sea dives and getting shots and studying the Titanic down below it while it's been sunk, he has spent more time with the Titanic than the actual passengers ever did. Collectively in hours. It's amazing just the amount of effort went into making this movie and trying to make it so accurate to the night of the event, to the point of the movie premiered 1997. Neil deGrasse Tyson saw the movie and he reached out to James Cameron and told him that the sky was wrong. The constellations were off for that time.
That bastard.
And it took long enough, but eventually, and I believe it was in 2012 when they re-released the movie on the 100-year anniversary of the ship setting sail. They went back and re-edited the sky to be accurate. So the stars you see in the sky are what the people of 1912 would have seen, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And just that amount of detail is very appreciated. The movie, I keep saying, is just massively impressive, especially for its time. Yes, there's some CGI that has been dated by now, but a lot of it still looks amazing. It pushed the boundaries of filmmaking, changed the way movies are not only perceived, but made. And that's what James Cameron does with all his movies. He that's what he's only interested in, is telling stories he wants to tell, but push the boundaries of filmmaking. He made this. He didn't make another movie till Avatar in 2009.
Yeah.
And he hasn't made another movie since then. Oh, he's making Avatar movies now, but yeah. He's on my Mount Rushmore of greatest filmmakers of all time, just because not only does he make great movies, he hasn't made a dud. What you think of Avatars, whatever, but he hasn't made a dud, and he changes the way movies are made every time. Titanic included. Yes, Titanic was the romance of a generation, but it's the kind of love story that will go on. Just like my heart.
Your heart
and my heart
on.
Will go on and on and on.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, I'm not a fan of Avatar. I don't think Avatar is that great. But I recognize its importance, and I recognize what it did and why it was as big as it is. And I realize that he is a phenomenal director. In every way, shape, and form, he has an eye for making a good piece of cinema. And I really don't know what I mean. I do know. I was gonna say I don't know what's next in store for him, but it's Avatar 2, 3, and 4. Sadly,
apparently it's Titanic 2.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to see this historical fiction. Story kind of done where it's a real event, but seeing them utilize these two fictional characters or several fictional characters to tell this unique story that's a driving force behind this tragedy and making you actually care about the characters. A lot of times with, because you could say this movie is a disaster movie in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times biggest problem with disaster movies is they, don't make you care about the characters. You could give two shits about the characters. But you do care about these characters. You want Jack and Rose to live. You want Cal to, sadly, die. So, excuse me. It's just interesting that he was able to do that and, you know, find a way to tell this story that really pushed the bounds of cinema. With this historical event.
It's funny you said, like, you want them to end up together. Here I am watching this movie for, like, the millionth time, and I'm still like, turn, you bastards. And they hit the boat. I'm like, fuck! They hit it again.
You dumbass!
They hit the boat. They hit the iceberg. I'm like,
so bad!
I know. I'm just like, oh. And he has to die, too. Mm.
Yeah, and it almost makes you not want to watch it again, though. You're like, yeah, he's just going to die.
The big complaint is there was room for both of them on that door. Yes, there is room for both of them. They show it in the movie, though. When he tries to get on to it, it starts to flip or it's going to sink. So there was no way he was going to be able to be on that door with her. And if they did take turns, they both probably would have died.
Yeah.
If that were the case. Mythbusters did a thing where they tested it out, like if there's a way to make them survive, and they both would have been able to float on the door if Rose had taken off her life jacket and they were able to fasten it to the bottom, to under the door, then it would have been able to float more.
I can only now, do granted, so much.
Granted, these characters had been through a night of hell, and the panic that they had to have been going through. There's no way they could have thought to do that in that quick of a moment.
Yeah.
Or would have even thought to do that in general. So I people say it's like a plot hole, and I disagree.
Yeah. I don't necessarily believe that it is a plot hole. Because I mean, they do answer that right there, that, like, he couldn't get up, and even then, it's about the story. it's about the story. You gotta, you know, just kind of let it ride. That's what happened in the movie. Why do people insist on changing it and trying to make it, you know, work for them? Kind of deal. You
know? So that's what James Cameron kind of said. He's like, because he was a guest on that episode of MythBusters. He's like, you know what? I guess you proved me wrong. We might have made a mistake, but at the end, the dude had to go down.
Yeah.
So, he's like, I wrote it that way. He was gonna die. So,
yeah, didn't matter. I mean, that'd be like really any movie where someone dies. You're like, well, if you do this, they didn't have to die. It's like, well, that was the fucking story, though. Now, like,
yeah,
did Darth Vader really have to die? Well, they could have maybe got him some help and got him off the ship. They didn't have to die. But, you know, he did. Like, what do you want?
Yeah.
I don't understand. But indeed, that was Titanic, kind of closing out our month of love. And with that being said, are you ready to take this to the factory? Do you have anything more you would like to touch base on?
I don't, honey bunny.
Okay, then. So, let us continue on. We're going to get into the factory. So in this portion of the show, this is where we take the film we just watched and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same film, same story, just modern booking for the modern era. However, like I said, every now and again, I said this at the start of the show, every now and again, we mix it up, do something a little fun. And this week, this came from a joke, actually, that we, when we were talking with my friend Pork, about this movie, I mentioned, can you imagine if this movie was directed by Quentin Tarantino? So, we decided this week that we would cast this film as if it was a Tarantino film, across any era. So, you're plucking the actor or the actress from that role that they played, however young they were, or whatever they were portraying, and placing them in the role of these characters. And so... with that being said, Titanic, Tarantinanic.
Pulp Anic.
Pulp Titanic.
Kill Titanic. Ugh, that's poor taste.
Reservoir Titanic.
Inglorious Titanic.
Once Upon a Time in Titanic. That would work.
I like that.
That would work. Titanic Unchained.
Yeah, I was about to be like Django Titanic. Yeah. Once Upon a Time in Titanic. That's sweet.
All right. Now that I like. So with that being said, we're going to have to work through this together because I've seen a lot of Tarantino films, but it's interesting because we're kind of in an interesting place here where Jack and Rose were what, 17 and 18? 17 and is he older, like 20s?
The characters were the actor and actress. They were in their early 20s.
Yeah. So, and then you have Billy Zane, who was, you said, 24, I believe. His
mid 20s. Yeah.
His character seems like he was probably in his mid 20s or later, even later 20s, maybe. And so, with that being said, who do you want to recast as in if they were in a Tarantino Titanic?
Oh, we can just have fun with it and just pick whatever the hell we want.
Jack, Rose, Cal, who else?
We could do Captain Smith. We should definitely do Brock Lovett, who is played by Bill Paxton.
And we get Bill Paxton to play him.
Well, he passed away.
I know.
That's
As I said it, I was like, oh, shit, this is Wes Craven all over again.
Yeah, as I say, Ben's made that mistake more than once.
So Brock Lovett, Captain Smith, Cal, Rose, Jack. What's Cal's muscle named? What's his deal?
Lovejoy. His muscle.
His muscle.
Yeah.
Lovejoy.
Played by, what's his name? David Warren.
And let's do that and then Mr. Andrews.
Mr. Andrews.
He's an important
I made a mistake. Billy Zane was like 31.
Yeah. Well, yes, you did. Because you said he was the same age as me, or younger.
Well, he's 55, and that this movie came out 25 years ago. I don't know why. I thought it came out 30 years ago. My math's all kinds of fucky.
You know, we're not math people here. All right, well, then let's get to it. Let's cast our Mr. Andrews, the creator, the architect behind Titanic. Who would you have play the role of Mr. Andrews? If he was from a Tarantino film.
So, just to be clear with all you Split listeners out there, when we say a Tarantino film, we're doing this for fun. So, it could be like, let's say Uma Thurman. It could be Uma Thurman from Kill Bill. It could be Uma Thurman from Pulp Fiction. Not like that actual character, but just of that era.
We're plucking her from that time, yes.
Yes. So for Mr. Andrews, I have two in mind, so you can tell me who you'd rather. The more respectable choice, the obvious choice, would be Tim Roth. It's like Oswaldo Mulberry. He's in several Tarantino films, whether it's Hateful Eight or Reservoir Dogs.
He's big in Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah. But then as like a ha-ha kind of Mr. Andrews about Michael Madsen, Joe Gage.
Rose, get out of here.
Sorry I didn't make a better ship for you, young Rose.
She'd be like, what? What about you know, when she comes to see Mr. Andrews at the end, he says, you know, I'm sorry, Rose, I am the author of all your pain. And it's Christoph Waltz.
That'd be good. And his horse Fritz.
Yeah, and Fritz is with him at all times. he's standing by the clock with the horse. At the end, with his big old dentist tooth.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Why the hell not?
Yeah, we could have Christoph Waltz be it and pull out of his coat pocket the documents and things. And yes,
I'm gonna go for you, Christoph Waltz. For me, I'll stick with Tim Roth.
All right.
So here we go. Mr. Andrews is Christoph Waltz.
Hey, there it is. Well, then let's get to Lovejoy, because I mean, who I had in mind for Lovejoy was your joking pick for
Then let's give Michael it Madsen. To him, because my Lovejoy was Christoph Waltz.
Oh, really? I think Michael. Don't you think Michael Madsen fits that role better?
Like, oh yeah. Yeah, certainly. Probably.
I searched the whole ship. She's nowhere.
Yeah. I saw her on the other side with him.
I make my own luck.
Yeah.
That's why I smoke cigarettes every day.
What if he's just like, instead of I make my own luck, he's like, I got a gun. I'm like, sure.
Thanks. Sure you do.
Yeah.
What about Brock Lovett?
So Brock Lovett, I originally played by Bill Paxton. You can't have a Quentin Tarantino movie, a proper one anyway, without Samuel L. Jackson. So I put Samuel Jackson as my Brock Lovett. I'll be goddamned seeing that Hope Diamond. Fuck my ass.
It's payday, boys. They're going down. He says, hold on to your butts. That's not from this movie, though.
But it could be. when will he say motherfucker?
He meets Old Rose for the first time and says, look at you.
Look how old you've become.
That's Kylo Ren, Force Awakens.
Okay.
Says it to Max von Sydow. Would he... Samuel Jackson, would he, where would he say motherfucker? That is a question, though.
Well, there
it would be when he's taken out all the scuzz out of the safe. He'd be like, motherfucker.
Could be then. It could be where they actually use it. Yes, the I don't remember the gentleman's name, but He's just like, and then they were fucked. Sorry. Or whatever he said. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but he doesn't say the F word.
Yeah, he does.
No, he does. Not, I don't think he did.
No, he does.
Oh, shit. Hell. Well, for me, to play Brock, love it. I wanted to get, I wanted to cast Kurt Russell in this role so bad because I wanted older, like, or not older, but younger Kurt Russell, like the longer hair and like Jack Burton, Kurt Russell, but he wasn't in any, until The Hateful Eight. Even though he doesn't really look like he's aged a day. But I thought for that role, he's kind of a cool, calm, and collected guy. Not much in way of like getting overly excited. And I thought that old Brucey Willie would fit that role pretty well.
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction, yeah, Bruce Willie. Okay. He still had hair at that time, so
that's true. Maybe could have been a hair piece.
Yeah, you know. Yeah,
you never know.
Yeah, no one would.
But let's see if he has any luck finding the heart of the ocean, and he does not. But Samuel Jackson does.
All right, then Samuel Jackson, it is. And so then we move on to Captain Smith. You got to play Captain Smith.
Come on. Look at him. Think of what Captain Smith looks like. Not yes. The king of Rohan, but Kurt Russell is who he looks like.
Kurt Russell. Okay.
Kurt Russell, but he needs to have his great big bushy beard he had in Hateful Eight. And then he could be the captain of the Titanic.
So
he'd be like, let's stretch our legs.
I went with
take her to sea, Mr. Murdoch.
I went with a man that'll be double dog damned, and that is Bruce Dern. He already played Sandy Stern. Smithers, General Sandy Smithers. Why not Captain Smith as well? sitting there in his chair at the end, shaking.
Might as well.
Samuel Jackson will say, "You're starting to see pictures, ain't you?"
But he's saying that to Old Rose.
Yes.
Don't forget.
Yeah.
Well, let's flip her and find out. Ugh, it's a heavy coin, and it's still tails for me.
Okay.
Kurt
Russell, what about your cow? Who's playing this rich man?
Who isn't? Indeed.
I mean, for me, it's easy, but...
Is it easy?
To a degree. I feel cheap using it, but I would like, he'd be a little older for the role, but you know, who gives a damn? He doesn't look a day over 20, and that's Leo as Cal, but playing his Calvin Candy.
Does he have to have the nasty beard and teeth and everything?
No, he's got to have perfectly plucked eyebrows and nice hair, but Calvin Candy style.
Oh, I see. You want him to call that ugly richness in him.
Yes. Yes, that.
I see. Yes, indeed. But maybe he could look like, Rick Dalton.
Yeah. Handsome. Always have a cigarette in his mouth.
Yes, of course. It's a good pick. Good pick. Mine is better. And unexpected, maybe. People forget, sleeping on old John Travolta, Pulp Fiction era, but
John Provolone.
Is he good looking? I could see him playing the shit out of this role.
I thought about him too. I was like, I feel like he'd be pretty good. Doesn't he play an asshole? When in his younger days, when he was a heartthrob, he didn't play many like asshole characters. But isn't he an asshole in Carrie?
Yeah, his first movie. What are you talking about?
Well, once he got like. Once he started dancing around.
Hey, he's such a good actor. Play an asshole anytime.
You're not wrong.
Let's see what the coin has to say. Hey, this is... Titanic's my movie. It's my movie.
Fate has decided it.
Yeah.
What about your Jack and your Rose will do a tandem pair.
Okay, this is it. Don't get scared now. Who do you got?
This one's hard. I really didn't know where to go with it because it is like, I don't know. It's interesting because it's, it's iconic to piece two people together. So I went with, I tried to find a relationship in a movie that was, that had good chemistry, but it like ultimately led in a different way. But I went with Michael Fassbender from Inglourious Bastards. And is it Melanie Laurent? The blonde actress who they kind of have engagements throughout. And I thought they would be a good suited pair for this role. And she's really good. And I haven't really seen her. And I think that's her only, that is her only Tarantino movie. She was in other movies like Now You See Me. But that was, other than that.
What character does she play again?
She's the second. She is.
Are we in Inglourious Basterds that we're talking about?
Yes. Shoshana.
Shoshana.
Yes.
Au revoir, Shoshana.
Yeah. She has those scenes with Michael Fassbender. She has a handful of scenes with Michael Fassbender throughout. So I thought that they had some good chemistry and would be well suited together. I almost went with Daniel Brühl as well, but
did they have scenes together?
Maybe I'm thinking of Daniel Brühl. Am I thinking of Daniel Brühl and not Michael Fassbender? Then I am.
Because Michael Fassbender is with Diane Kruger.
Yes, indeed. I was just all flipped around because I literally was looking at Shoshana's picture and it was the scene where they're like meeting for the first time. I'm like, that's Daniel Brühl. So my apologies. Then I will do that instead. I'll do Daniel Brühl from that because he's also very good.
He's your Jack. Okay.
Civil War fame.
Right.
Daniel Brühl, and I'll do Melanie Laurent.
Okay. I also went with that like same thought process at one point. I was going to go Michael Fassbender and Diane Kruger. However, I looked at the plethora of different actors who've appeared in Quentin Tarantino movies. So for Rose, it might have been a little on the nose for Rose, but I picked Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. She was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She's great in Wolf of Wall Street, and she's really kind of coined her own place in the world as Harley Quinn. Margot Robbie I had as my Rose. She's a great actress, too. I, Tonya, if you haven't seen that, check it out. She's amazing. And then for Jack, this might be on the nose too, but I was looking at all the actors who have appeared in Quentin Tarantino movies, and there's only one guy to play Jack. That's Leonardo DiCaprio.
Just old man Leo.
Yeah. Well, Rick Dalton Leo.
This is going to have some major Dirty Dancing vibes. She's 17. He's like a 50-year-old man. He's like pointing at the camera.
Margot Robbie isn't sad.
But she's going to play a 17-year-old.
And Leo's going to play an 18-year-old.
he's 18. He looks like he's Leo now.
Hey, Leo looks young as hell. What are you talking about?
You're not wrong. All right. Well, flip your head. Heads mine, tails yours.
We don't have to worry about it because it's heads for you. There I win you everything go. Else except for the important one.
You know, and that's, you know, you might look at this and be like, oh, really? Like Daniel Brühl, Melanie Laurent? But we even said that they're obviously very good actors. Melanie Laurent's really good in Inglourious Basterds. Daniel Brühl is really good in the movies that I've seen him in, be it Inglourious Basterds, be it Civil War. I'm excited to see him in that. But to that point, too, like, what's his name? Leo and Kate Winslet, they really hadn't had much before this, like real big. I mean, Leo, yes, was Oscar nominated at that point, but he'd only done a handful like big movies. Well, he was nominated for Gilbert Grape, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And then Kate Winslet was in a handful of things, but it was like up and coming. Obviously not the stars they are now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, for it. This might be one that we'll look back on someday and be like, fuck.
Hey, I offered Leo DiCaprio, Jack.
He did, but Rick Dalton, Leo.
Hell yeah.
I want to watch Rick Dalton watching Titanic, but acting as if it was Rick Dalton playing that role.
Yeah.
Like being like watch this scene.
Asshole.
Yeah, I want that. I want that really bad. But indeed, the Titanic, Once Upon a Titanic remake directed by Tarantino would be Mr. Andrews, played by Christoph Waltz, Lovejoy, played by Michael Madsen, Brock Lovett, played by Samuel Jackson, Captain Smith, played by Kurt Russell, Cal, played by John Travolta, Rose, Melanie Laurent, and Jack Daniel Brühl. Indeed. So that is our factory. Do you have any questions before we go?
Questions. Why don't you ask me a question for once?
If you had to choose between sinking, like having the Titanic, like a sinking ship, or which would you? I'll tie this back. Would you rather sink on the Titanic or sink on the Orca? But you don't necessarily have. Like you're Brody and you don't know how it's gonna end. Like you're just in Brody's shoes right now.
Hey, whose shoes am I in on the Titanic?
Jack. So only one way you're living. But you have to stare that shark down the face.
This is what I'll say. I already know my answer, but can I be me now, but put in that situation? So I'm like teleported.
So you're like, I'm gonna do what they did on Mythbusters.
Yeah, can I do that?
No, because then the shark won't blow up. Because Mythbusters disproved that.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I still wouldn't pick the shark.
I
don't know if that would work. The guy don't want to be that close.
You're like, I've never shot a gun before. Blow up.
I would, regardless, I'd be on Titanic. I'm not teleporting myself, so I wouldn't be like to experience what it was like, to see what it was like. But, I guess I would want to go to Titanic just so I could tell Rose that she's going to go on. She's going to survive.
Today is your Independence Day.
Like, I love you, Jack, but don't say it. Say it again, but don't say it.
You're like, love is a really strong word.
Yeah, he never says it.
He walks back on it real fast.
He kills himself.
Anyways, that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That's our primary site. That's where we post our show to first, and then subsequently it gets shipped out everywhere else. So Google Play, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, hey, we're there. You can also find us over on Twitter. We are at The Bros Movie Pod. That's where we'll be posting links to the show, memes that Gus makes, and showing what we're going to be watching that week. And at, also, you can find us over on Facebook.
Hey, go to Facebook and type in The Brothers Movie Factory. We'll be there. I like to post memes of what we're watching each and every week, as well as links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audio Boom, Spotify, Twitter, and that.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until next week, brothers.
Brothers.
Brothers.